Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who can still smell the fart that either Trevor or Simon did in the dressing room last week. It's Richard Herring. Tell you what, last week I forgot to wear my belt as well, didn't I? And then I went home. Just coincidentally, I'm wearing the same stuff because I've washed it. But I forgot to put my belt on again. That's ridiculous. I hope you're all good. I take my daughters. Oh, hello, welcome to the show, first of all, I should say. This is Rich Hayes, Leicester Square Theatre Podcast. But I was hanging around with the Men in Trousers the other day. They remember they took over from Trevor and Simon on Live and Kicking, they call it a Hellistopper, so it's, they're pretty funny guys, so it's good. I like them. So I was hanging around with James from Nick and James. He said, this is the headmaster, he wouldn't join in. He's a pastor now. He said, no, I'm not joining in with that. Had enough fun. I take my daughter to Little Gym in Hertfordshire. Nearly gave away where I lived there. Phew, don't want any of you lot knowing where I live. And more specifically than that. I'm pretty sure that Matthew Perry from Friends is one of the dads there. I mean, I don't know whether has got kids or whether he lives in Hertfordshire or whether he's the kind of person who would take his kids to a little gym in Hertfordshire. But it looked like him, he was looking at me, and I think he was thinking, is that Richard Herring from this morning, Rich, not Judy? Can't be. That's mainly one for the people who go to the little gym. And the other mums and dads from that week going, yeah, I thought that as well, Rich. That's a good piece of observation. My daughter has started, she's three, she can talk quite well now, but she's got into this habit now, wherever you talk to her, she goes, whatever you say, she goes, for a long time, right? And it's very difficult for me to tell her off because I find it really funny. And also, when I was from about the age of 3 to the age of about 13, I just walked around the house mainly naked. I was naked till I was about 13, saying poo-poo, wee-wee, bottom. That was my catchphrase.
So I had to go to his office. Don't do that, because, you know, it's a bit rude. And though I know a little boy who did something similar, and he went on to be the 500th funniest comedian in the country. So maybe there's a lesson. But what she does is she goes, well, I've got a little boy who's 4 months old, and she does it to him, and he will laugh, and she'll go, Ernie finds it funny. So, and he does find it funny every single time. For him, it's the repetition that makes it amusing. So let's crack on. Even when she's doing it right in his face and just spraying him with her own spittle, he still finds it funny. But I think when you're a younger sibling, it's a kind of Stockholm syndrome thing, isn't it? Gonna better laugh at this person because they've been nice to me so far, but they could crush me in a second and kill me. Anyway, let's crack on. My guest this week is probably best known for serving on the West Midlands Police and Crime Force. Don't know if that's what the last word says. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Jess Phillips. It's Jess Phillips MP. Jess Phillips MP. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Thanks.
Good, thank you.
I wasn't a police officer.
No, you were. Just what were you? Sure. You were on the panel.
I was just like a bureaucrat.
Yeah. How was it? What was the funniest thing that happened on the West Midlands Police and Crime? Something. Parish. No, what does it say? What's the panel?
There was a by-election had to be called because the Police and Crime Commissioner died suddenly. That was not a funny story. and I was in charge of the police for like a day.
Were you?
And there was a bomb scare in Birmingham on that day, wow. On the one day I was in charge. But it turned out it was just a lampshade in a package. So, no harm, no foul.
It's good to be cautious.
Yeah.
There are not many people have lampshades in Birmingham, so you can understand why.
I'm not going to rise to the anti-Birmingham sentiment.
My double act partner came from, well, Solihull, it hardly counts.
Oh, that
it?
Does not count.
So you're the second MP I've had on this show. It's very, a lot of the politicians like coming on here because it,
you know,
helps.
Lot,
it
too.
Helps you. You and Ed Miliband, who I wasn't sure if it was Ed or David Miliband backstage. Had to think about it for a second. He was good though, wasn't he? Yeah, but you wish you'd vote for him now, don't you? Now you've seen the alternatives. So, no, I was quite surprised. I've been reading your excellent book, Every Woman, One Woman's Truth About Speaking the Truth. And I was surprised that you've only been an MP since 2015.
Yep, so nearly 3 years.
3 years now, yeah. Because, you know, you're quite... It's you and Mary Black... From that
Mari
Black from that intake, because it'll become pretty famous instantaneously.
Yeah.
How do you think you've managed to do that?
Just like not being boring and saying what you think. I think is the truth. Mari is the young. She's the youngest MP ever elected. I think since like I don't know, like Pitt the Younger, he was like 12 or something, and. So she stood out for that reason, as well as she made an amazing maiden speech.
She did, yeah.
And she's just normal. I went to Kenya with her. We went on a delegation to look at where DFID money was spending. And I asked her if she was missing her partner, and she was just like, a bit, but I just can't wait for a KFC. So, you know, so she's just normal. So I think that that is part of the thing, is that we don't maybe talk like politicians, that we sound normal and we just say it as we find it.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of odd, isn't it, that being normal is a standout thing.
It's a low bar.
It is. But that, you know, that, I mean, I've felt this a lot. Anyway, you talk about it in your book, but just like the sort of stupid, I mean, the traditions of the Houses of Parliament are kind of interesting, but the way that everyone behaves in the chamber is sort of so pathetic.
Oh, it is really,
you know,
really
this boys' club kind of, and the heckling and the...
Yeah, I mean, I heckle. I'm not going to slag off people who heckle, but yeah, there is a very masculine air to the heckling, which is really, really awful. And people do like this to you, like, as if they're patting your head, and people tell you to shush, and I mean, it is awful. And it wouldn't happen in normal workplaces, I don't think.
No.
I don't know.
Well, yeah. Well, it's, you would hope that the main workplace of the people who are in charge of the country would be ahead of everywhere else rather than way behind everywhere else.
Well, you would hope so, but it's definitely not. We don't have normal working hours, we don't have maternity leave, we don't have paternity leave, we don't have anything normal, really. So it's very far behind, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
But the reason that people speak like politicians, unlike me and Murray Black and others, there are others, is because people love to feast on you when you say something even slightly offbeat. So unless you stick to the line and keep on sticking to the line, you get terrorised, and so you don't do it again. If you say something that's slightly, say, off-colour, makes it sound like I think it's fine to be racist or something. I don't think that. But if you get something wrong, like, you know, I'm not normally here to defend Diane Abbott, but, you know, she got some figures wrong. But, you know, running the country or running anything doesn't rely on you being able to remember. Do you know what I mean? Just, like, list things. It's not pointless.
No.
You are allowed pieces of paper as well in life. So I think that as soon as you make any sort of mistake, you have to live by a standard that normal people don't have to live by. So people become sort of automaton in that environment.
Yeah. Well, and I suppose what we saw with Ed, I suppose, is that, like, when he was the leader, he had to behave in a certain way, and it wasn't really him.
Yeah.
And so it became not that likeable, because you think, what's this slightly weird guy? And then you see who he really is when he's relaxed and he's not bothered about any of that
stuff. He's a proper laugh, Ed
Miliband.
Yeah. Like, he's really, really, really funny.
He is.
But, yeah, when you're the leader of the Labour Party, are you allowed to be funny? You're not really, are you? You have to be...
I don't know. I just sort of wonder whether people would... It sort of feels like people are ready for a change.
I think they are, and
I think that you know, whether it's a good or a bad change, I think we're seeing some changes that are a result of people going, I want change because I don't like the way things have worked. And obviously in the Houses of Parliament, we've seen that with the expenses, with the sexism and you know, all the various things that have happened, that have come through. We've seen that there's lots to change. But I sort of think the whole thing should be, don't you want to sort of start again with it? And
yes,
I always think they should build a House of Parliament in the centre of the country.
In Birmingham.
Well, you know...
We
don't have to punish the MPs that much, but it's somewhere outside of Birmingham.
Coventry? I mean, where are you suggesting?
Well, I would turn the House of Parliament into either a tourist attraction or a hotel or both, make lots of money out of it, pay for all the repairs by doing that. Mm-hmm. Americans will pay a lot of money to stay there.
That's true.
And just to look around. I'd love to go. I've looked around when I was at school and it's brilliant, and I'd love to, you know, do... sent on guided tours every day. That would do very well. I'd build a purpose-built city, political city in the middle of the Midlands where there is no isn't a city, where there's no houses at the moment. Everyone gets a flat. If they want to live by the Houses of Parliament, they can. That's where they live. And MPs get everything paid for them. I think they should get everything paid for them.
I think this is an interesting idea because security would be the main problem, wouldn't
but then you?
Because you would just bomb that town.
Well, no, but you could make... if you can fly...
You put it in a dome, like in The Simpsons.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Underground. It could be underground. It could be two miles underground.
And I think that it might be quite important for members of Parliament to interact with the public.
Yeah, but they can still do that. It means that people can get back to their constituencies more easily, doesn't it?
That's true. If you live on the Isle of Skye...
Yeah. And, like,
easier.
You know, they currently the MPs are all in a building that you could still bomb. So
that's true. People have tried
to attack it.
But we don't live there. We don't live there. We're not, like, there at night time.
But then isn't it, like, you know, you all live, like, in flats in, you know, quite a way out of town because you can't afford to live in the centre of town. And then you all take the night bus home, basically, don't you? So that's
I mean, honestly, I'm not actually... I was about to give some really good advice to terrorists. I won't do that, but we all pour out at one particular point in the evening. And just, like, everybody's, like, waiting for the bus.
Yeah.
It's not very glamorous. I've got some constituents who are from Ghana, and they came to door knock with me because they could not believe that, as a politician... I was going to walk up and down the streets and knock on people's doors.
Yeah.
They were like, where we live, people just drive past you in an SUV, blacked out, and live in the lap of luxury. You can't speak to them. You have nothing to do with them. Whereas we're just at a bus stop near you.
Yeah.
Waiting for a bus.
Yeah, but that whole thing, the campaigning thing, I met another MP, and I've forgotten her name, but on another podcast, and she was saying she ended up, like, door knocking and then recognised on the news as some terrorist suspects were being arrested that she'd knocked on that door and been to that flat.
I mean, that happens.
And you kind of think an MP turns up at your house. I mean, it's like a sort of comedy film, isn't it? An MP turns up at the terrorist house. Hello, can I rely on your vote? Oh, no, you can't. You're going to come and live here for a little while. So, you know, that's the great thing about it. I mean, it's great and it's terrifying, I would imagine, from your point of view. I mean, enough has happened and that we're aware of how precarious that is. But it's this weird double standard of towards MPs we have. I mean, I think what happened with Joe Cox is obviously your friend is like, I think that was the worst thing that happened in 2016 in the terrible, terrible year of lots of awful things happening. Because it's such an affront to everything that the country should stand for.
Absolutely.
You know, aside from the personal tragedy of it. And it didn't seem to be, you know, as big a deal as it should have been, really. But, you know, that people weren't thinking, my God, you know, MPs are taking these terrible risks us and...
They thought about it for about a week.
Yeah.
And then it was swept away. Like, there was a hashtag, like, thank your MP or something it was called. And, like, as soon as the week was done, people were still like, you scrounger, why haven't you collected my bins? Yeah. So, a week later. And I don't need praise or to be put on a pedestal all the time. And rigorous debate is fine. But, essentially... In the climate that we live in, sometimes it feels like, yeah, you're risking your life every day.
You definitely are. I mean, and you would think you want to be in a position where, I mean, everyone's protected, but also people are putting themselves...
Yeah, democracy needs to be protected as well. And to continue to have the system that is better than any system. The best thing about the parliamentary system in the UK is that people can reach you, people can come into your office, they can talk to you, and that you are, like, you know, you go to Wilkinson's to buy bin bags and you are just like everybody who lives around you. But it will come at a cost if, you know, the terrorist attack on Westminster, Joe being murdered outside a library. This is a woman who lived in war zones and was killed outside Birstall Library in West Yorkshire. And, yeah, it's... I think that people need to understand that it's an assault on all of us rather than just on people like me.
Yeah.
It's a massive assault on our democracy. And it's very, very serious, and we should take it more seriously. But then I'm not willing to make myself any more secure, really. I mean, we've had these people out to our house, and they were like, you've got to have bomb-proof windows and shit like that. I was like, oh, I don't want bomb-proof windows in my house. And they wanted, like, us to have, like, thumb things, scanners to get in and out the room. The kids will just get, like, locked in the porch for, like, weeks and weeks. And they wanted us to have panic buttons. And we were like, well, the kids are just going to hit them all the time. And they said, we'll put them up higher. So we've just created a target.
We'll put them out of reach.
Let's get the police officers
to come. If there is a alarm. Oh, it can't reach.
So, I don't want to live my life like that. That's not why I became a Member of Parliament.
No.
I don't want to not be able to walk to the corner shop. I don't want to have to be frightened. And mostly I'm not, to be honest. Just sometimes it does dawn on you that you are a target.
Yeah. And you've got, I mean, because of the world, you get a lot of abuse on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some people don't like it. Well, anyone saying anything they don't agree with, or a woman voicing
people don't opinions. Like women to speak up. Yeah. That's definitely true. So I get absolutely shed loads, although I actually can't see it now. And so, I mean, to all the people who might be listening to this who defend me, stop it, because all I see is your defence, because I obviously have an algorithm on Twitter that doesn't allow me to see really any of the abuse anymore.
Right.
But when people are being like, you leave her alone, she's one of us. I'm like that. What have they said? I don't know what these people have said. But there was a time when I was first elected before I had sort of kicked off at Twitter where it was constant, like thousands of messages every hour, just that you're going to be killed, stuff about my kids being hung, stuff about me being raped in all different ways, or how I was not suitable for a raping, which apparently is better. That's a low bar as well. So, yeah, I get an awful lot of that. But the worst stuff, actually, that you get, the most dangerous stuff is the stuff that is just like, it's the shut up stuff. It's trying to silence you all the time so that when you go to say something you think twice about it, and that is dangerous.
Well, it's a sort of weird place we found ourselves in the world where, you know, I mean, things have become very polarized. I think it's quite interesting about you in terms of that debate, the Brexit debate, is that you wanted to remain, but you voted with your the people of your constituency want to go with
it. In the Article 50 vote, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's because I know how I'd feel if it had been 52-48 the other way and the Leave had taken over Parliament and just voted to leave, I'd have raised a fucking army. Yeah. And that would be a massive assault on my democracy. And so I have to respect that I lost the vote. However, I won't vote for anything that sort of takes us out of the single market or out of the customs union at the moment, no.
Yeah.
I wouldn't vote though they voted to leave.
The vote isn't really clear about what it, you know...
It's nuanced, was it?
Well, if anything...
Who knew what a customs union was before?
Exactly. So
be honest. No one.
So we haven't had... Is the vote valid if we weren't given the proper information beforehand? And if people are claiming it's a vote for the hardest Brexit, if it's 52-48, it's the second softest Brexit we've voted for. So we should let the hard Brexit people have one thing.
Which one thing?
Well, they have to fight that
they
out for themselves.
Decide.
Yeah, and they can have that one thing.
Sovereignty is the thing they'd pick.
Yeah, probably.
That's the thing that they think that we don't have, sovereignty. Yeah. I mean, let them have it. I don't even know what it is. It's a totally made-up concept. I mean, I'm going to get horrendously trolled when you put this out. Horrendously, like, oh, I'll tell you what it is. We have a queen.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what... People are like, oh, we'll be able to make our own decisions. I think, what have I been doing? For the past 2 years, I've been sitting in that room going round and round in circles through those voting lobbies. What was that for if we don't make our own decisions? I don't know. It's crackers.
Is it going to work out? I mean, you know, I think it means we're... It means that your job for the next two years, let's say, it all gets wound up in the next year and a half, is just basically Brexit. For 4 or 5 years, we're just going to have nothing but Brexit, so nothing else is getting done, which seems insane.
Totally insane. That's actually the biggest tragedy of Brexit, is that it has removed the bandwidth for absolutely anything else. So no domestic legislation really goes through now. Budgets, basically what the country can run on, that's it. So all of the stuff that was progressing through the House just before she called the snap general election. So there was a brilliant piece of legislation that we had worked on around stopping domestic violence perpetrators being able to cross-examine their victims in family courts, which seems obvious, but isn't, and people are allowed to do it. And that just falls off the statute book, and it won't come back for another 3-4 years. So in every court in the land, in every family court, there is a woman being terrorised by a man who assaulted her because of Brexit, because there is no way of getting that through. And that, to me, you know, all the stuff around homeless legislation, all the stuff that they talk a good game about mental health, it can't change. Nothing can change because we can't get it through the House of Commons because there is no time to do that. And that is absolutely crippling for a nation not to be able to move forward. So all the shit they were saying today about student tuition fees, where's it going to... How are we going to get it through?
Yeah.
So they're just... Everything is just hot air and talking now. It's depressing. Sorry.
But that could be your entire time in Parliament could be just taken up.
Am I going to lose my seat? I mean, you see...
It could be, I'm saying.
No, that's true. I could lose my seat.
You did a lot better the second time.
16,000 majority. I think, I mean, I feel all right on that. But yeah, I suppose the Labour Party could get rid of me.
Well, there's that as well. So let's sort out some the big issues.
Okay.
Now we've dealt with Brexit.
Sorry, I bummed
you out. Now we've sorted out Brexit. Did you tell Diane Abbott to fuck off or not?
Yes, I did.
Because she says you didn't tell her to fuck off. Who do I believe?
The witnesses. One of whom was Jeremy Corbyn.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Maybe I'll take them to a court and make him testify.
Maybe she was
a Czechoslovakian spy.
Maybe she just didn't hear you say fuck off.
Maybe she didn't hear me. I mean, I can't account for what Diane Abbott can and can't hear.
Is that the only conversation you've had with Diane Abbott?
That's the only one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember it. I mean, it's the only one.
So she said you weren't the only feminist
in the Labour Party.
The Labour Party.
Yeah. Which I don't think I stood up and said, as the only feminist in the Labour Party, while sat opposite Harriet Harman. That would have been rude, wouldn't it? So, yeah. What she meant was, don't speak up. You're a new oik.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite rude to tell someone to fuck off on the first day.
Don't be rude to me when I'm clearly upset already. It wasn't the first day.
No.
It was Corbyn's first day.
So, yeah, well, it's interesting. But that's, I mean, I guess that's why people are going to like, the people are going to like you are going to like you because of stuff like that, do you think?
Yeah.
I mean, it's maybe. Like an honest human reaction.
Well, it is.
And it's an honest human, you know, and I think, again, having read your book a bit and read up about you, you've sort of come into politics because you want to help the people from where you live.
Yeah.
Which seems like a good good reason to do it.
I think that's the reason most people do it, though, isn't it?
But I don't think we hear... I think the problem is we're so in... You know, we're so used to hearing about the bad politicians, the corrupt politicians, and the politicians who are doing stuff for themselves. Mm. And, you know, there's 650 of you at the moment.
Yes,
until it all changes. And, you know, we hear about 20 or 30 people and, you know...
Tossers.
And a lot of them are tossers.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, because you'll Boris Johnson will be...
I mean, he's a tosser.
Yeah. I think we can agree.
I wish I could say tosser in Latin.
And you don't feel Boris Johnson's got into politics to help the people of Eton or wherever it is.
Yeah, where does Boris Johnson come from? There are many people in Parliament who are from... like unidentifier land, like they don't come from anywhere. They have that accent that doesn't identify with anywhere, and then they'll say things like, "I'm from Inverness," and you're like, "No, you're not. You're not from Inverness." So there's, I suppose most people though do get into politics, not necessarily to help the people where they come from, because if you come from a place where everybody's all right, what are you going to be doing?
Yeah.
I don't know, an extra Land Rover, but. Which would be good because they make those in my constituency if everybody could buy an extra Land Rover. We don't drive them, we just, you know, stick them together. But most people come in because they care about something.
Yeah.
There are exceptions, and Boris Johnson is definitely one of them,
yeah.
Where it is just like you go through door A, door B, door C, and you end up the Prime Minister. And those people, what galls me about them the most is they think they would have ended up there even if they'd been born on a council estate in Sparkhill in Birmingham, and they definitely wouldn't have. But, yeah, most people have a thing that they care about. There's quite a lot of forces people in there who really care about the forces, the people who care about doctors, who care about the NHS. There's most people go in with something. The vast majority of people are decent in there, actually, is the truth.
Sure. And so what made you want to, you know, become an MP? What, you know, it seems like it happened...
Yeah, like by an accident.
Well, like quite quickly, you were working in other areas and then quickly became... Because you sort of think like an MP, you'd have been through local government and... I mean, I know you've been working on other stuff.
I mean, I was a local councillor, though, but only for 3 years before I became an MP, and that was just a favour because they needed a woman.
Right.
So I was like, well, I'm a woman. I mean, there's 500,000 of them in Birmingham. I don't know why they couldn't find another one. But... Yeah, partially, it's like I like a test.
Yeah.
I'm quite competitive, and I had a bet with a woman called Wendy, who I work with, about who could become an MP the quickest.
Yeah.
And Wendy put in absolutely zero effort. Zero. She's still very happy working at Women's Aid, I think, Wendy. Shout out to Wendy. But I got so sick of seeing the wrong decisions being made where I worked. And I worked a lot with the Home Office, I worked a lot with the Ministry of Justice while working at Women's Aid. And you're banging your fists against the table and you just think, well, I've got to bang them on the other side of the table to get people to listen to me. And I thought the Labour Party would win in 2015. Ed Miliband should have been funnier up front. And I thought that I wouldn't just be an opposition MP banging my fists still, just at a slightly bigger, grander table. I thought that I would have the chance to change things for the thing that I really cared about. I set about becoming an MP. I just one day decided, I'm going to become an MP.
Okay. I've decided I'm going to become an MP.
takes quite a lot of effort.
Yeah. Boris Johnson can die.
Yeah, that's true. Money or effort. You need one or the other.
I could crowdfund it.
Do you think with... I wonder with Brexit, like, whether we can... If we can do it and turn it around by turning... It just sort of feels to me like, you know, that in 10 years' time, a lot of the people who voted for Brexit might not be here anymore. And
something like 100,000 of them already aren't.
Yeah. And or might have changed their minds. Yeah. And it feels like young...
Are you not threatening to kill everybody who voted Leave?
And it feels like young people are getting more politically engaged, although then some of the statistics say that that wasn't really the case with
Gordon. No, yeah.
But it feels, you know, it feels like young people should become politically engaged. So what's happened in Florida the week we're recording this is, you know, those school kids saying we're not going to stand for this anymore, and whether that leads anywhere or not is another question. But at least they're trying to do it, and it's because it's the world's run by all these middle-aged to old men who only care about themselves, and there's a lot more of everybody else, and there's a lot more young people, and you know, young people now can't afford to. I know, even do anything in London. I could cobble together and buy a flat in the 1990s. With no,
someone you would never be able.
Somebody
to do
like
that
me could never do. I couldn't do it now. You know, even now I'm making a slight living, and things have got to change. I wonder whether we can kind of overturn Brexit by going ahead with Brexit and then turning Britain into a nice liberal society like Norway that is just outside of Europe.
There's a bloke in Parliament called Bill Cash, and he has been there for approximately 100 years. And he wears his trousers very high. And he has been there definitely since the previous referendum.
Right.
And he's my touchstone, Bill Cash, because he has stood up in every debate ever for the past 46 years and complained about the European Union. So I'm just going to stand for 46 years every day and say, I think we should go back into that European Union in the hope that we might have to wait a while.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't assume that this is the absolute end of Britain becoming totally isolationist. And maybe we can, maybe we stay in the customs union, we stay in the single market, and we become Norway. Now, Norway has a lot of money in natural resources. I think each person in Norway has about £8 million per head in the government coffers. That is not the case in the United Kingdom. So drill for oil and hope for the best is what I'm going to suggest. And I will do a Bill Cash for the next 46 years.
I mean, the thing about UKIP that is admirable is that bloke managed to shag that girl?
No,
come on. She's a bit racist, but still. No, the thing that
I cannot
is
believe it. He was totally punching. I mean, unbelievable. She's a hottie, a racist hottie.
She's really, you know, when he got voted out, she tweeted, "Oh, bad luck, Mr. Ramsay Bolton, whatever his name is. Looks like Henry. I won't be fucking you anymore." Is what she said. And then everyone went, "Whoa!" And she went, "Oh, I'm joking, obviously. Do you not realise your jokes are what caused this in the first place? Shut up." They believed in something. And they stuck with it for a long time.
Yeah.
And they never... they got European MEPs, but they didn't get one... Did they ever get anyone voted?
They had one who walked the floor.
Yeah, went over. And a load in the Tory party who were essentially them. And they've managed to get exactly what they wanted to happen, at least that's what should be happening. So that's an incredible thing. They're sort of 25% of the electorate have managed to completely dictate where the country goes and what we're doing.
Yeah.
And that means that another group of 25% of people, which is, you know, is again...
But you have to be willing to lie and use fear.
Yeah.
That is the only way that UKIP did it, through persistence. I mean, I will give them credit for persistence.
Yeah.
Do you remember when it was Kilroy? Or was it something else? He was from Birmingham, bless him. He was like Dignitas or something else. Veritas. But they kept on it, and there's something to be said about that. But the thing is about the left or the liberal elite is that we are less willing to use dirty tactics. Mm-hmm. We are less willing to lie our way to a result. And we are less willing to use fear and to exploit weakness in order to achieve what we want to achieve. Now, what we should have been doing is, while UKIP were looking like lunatics, run by lunatics, we should have been talking up the European Union. We should have been making much more about what was good about it. We didn't do that until the very end. We allowed politicians for decades to blame everything on it. And we didn't say, oh, actually, that was Britain who made that decision. Like anyone who complains about health and safety legislation from the European Union and says, oh, you know, it's we've got to have all these standards, has obviously never been to Spain because they have plug sockets in the shower. That was obviously a British standard that we were living by, and we didn't say that enough. We didn't say, yes, the European Union made this decision, but because Britain made it. And that is the problem. But we're not willing to... I'm not willing. I don't care what it takes. You know, if staying in the European Union meant that I had to be racist and sexist and vile and lie to people, I'd rather leave. And they're willing to do that. They were willing to pick on immigrants. They were willing to distort figures. And the Liberals are never going to be... Not the Liberal Democrats. They are definitely willing to lie. Have you ever seen one of their bar charts? Un-fucking-believable. Like, you know, they in my seat, they called it a two-horse race and then came third. which I love. But you know that we're not dirty like that, and they were dirty, and I'm not willing to do that.
If you're Remain, you can't really lose from Brexit, because either the Brexit people turn out to be correct and everything's brilliant, so that's okay, or they're incorrect and everything.
You were right.
Well, you're right, and then we have to go back, and we have to go back in with you know.
Oh, that's a positive thought. Yeah. I feel better now.
Or. Just nobody is satisfied and it's just a bit rubbish. It's
well,
just
know,
in a different way and we carry on.
The people who make the Land Rovers where I live will be hideously impoverished and, you know, that will be awful.
I think the perfect Brexit is just nobody in the country is satisfied with whatever happens. And I think that's likely to be what it is. But that's the most British thing. It's
we'll be so happy.
Nobody gets what they actually want.
I think that's perfect.
That's sort of what's going to happen.
Yeah, that is what's going to happen.
Be good. We'll see how it goes. You're the Liberal guy in Yardley. He seems in quite an interesting character. So it's called Hemming. I've got his first name written down.
John
Hemming.
Very glamorous.
Yeah. He's a self-confessed love rat.
Yep.
And his ex-wife kidnapped his girlfriend's cat.
That's correct. His ex-wife kidnapped his girlfriend's cat.
I reckon I could beat this guy. Well, by 16,000 words. What?
But what I really like is when you're door knocking, people have conflated two cat-related stories and believe that he put a cat in a bin. Now, as I just previously said, I don't lie. Yeah. Don't play dirty. I do point out that he was not Cat Bin Lady. He was from Coventry, I think, so I can see the confusion. But people are like, oh, he put that cat in the bin, didn't he? And I'm like that. No. His ex-wife, who was his current wife at the time, she stole the kitten of... there's a brilliant CCTV footage. Definitely Google it.
What happened to this? Is the cat okay?
No, the cat was never found. It may have been in a bin, but I cannot speculate. I don't think he put it in a bin. He likes to, like, you know, come at me with lawyers. So I'm not going to say that he put it in a bin. He didn't put it...
You've made it very clear he didn't put it in a bin.
He did not put it in a bin.
He killed it and buried it in the garden. So you've made that very clear.
To be fair, was the victim of the crime in many ways.
He was, but... Was he to blame?
I'm
not going to get into victim blaming here.
But he was a philanderer.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a brilliant Victoria Corrin piece written about how he basically is to blame because he drove her to cat theft. I can't speculate. No. People's personal lives are their own personal.
Let's talk about International Men's Day, mm-hmm. because we both have a smart obsession
with this.
We do.
You do a brilliant thing. It's like a really great service that you
yeah,
do.
Yeah, well, it's kind of, we'll see. I think I might have made this. This is happening. Well, it happened last week as this goes out, so we'll see how it went.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, so this is going out in a few weeks. But I might make it the last one.
Oh, no, it's a genuinely good service.
It's true. I hoped it might be over. It's sort of, it's the same thing as you had with this. So that you had a guy in, the Conservative guy arguing that International Men's Day should be, as have a debate in
yeah.
Parliament as International Women's Day does.
Yes.
Which you were slightly dismissive of.
Well, I was mainly dismissive of the fact that he actually said to me, on a committee where I was the only woman out of nine men, men just don't have enough opportunity to speak up in Parliament. So I laughed at that. And I said that I felt like, to me, in Parliament every day was International Men's Day. Yeah. But, of course, I think that we should talk about things like male suicide and prostate cancer and testicular cancer. The thing is that's what men's activists aren't interested in, talking about any of those things. They're just interested in slagging off women. Yeah. It's like if at Women's Aid, we didn't like open refuges. We just sat around and just went, they're buggers, aren't they? What can we take off them?
Well, the truth is, as well, if you're in, and that's what you get, you know, that's what I get a lot now.
Yeah.
It's, do you not care about male suicide? You go, yeah, I do care about male suicide. I've done lots of gigs for Calm, and, you know, it's an important subject. But if you conflate it into this thing, which is men complaining about there being International Women's Day, you're actually devaluing all of those very good points.
Absolutely.
About and a day for equality is a day for everyone anyway.
Yeah.
So if you're having a day where everyone's equal, that includes the guys. So that includes...
Yeah, just some, get on board.
Kind of some things coming down, a few things going up, but, you know, it gets equal. So it's sort of interesting that people... Well, you know, that nobody on an International Men's Day is going, hooray, here it is, let's go for it, which is sort of what I'm interested in seeing. Why are all these people asking about it on one day and then doing nothing about it when it turns up?
I know,
up?
I'm like,
even
crap
when you've told
the fuck
them.
Up.
I think this year I might just try it. There must be some way on Twitter I can mark them all down and say, what are we doing tomorrow on November the 18th?
Just put them in a group. There's a way of putting people in a group.
There must be some way of doing it.
Yeah, there is. I will get on Twitter for you for that.
So, it devalues men much more than
it does.
That particular thing than women. I feel bad about it because I don't like to do it on... I feel like it's good that I'm corralling that bit of the internet.
Yes.
But I don't like the idea that it's a man... I like it.
I feel like you're doing us a solid, so we don't have to say, well, actually, it's on this day.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's helpful, okay. And I'm always after men sticking up for us as well.
Not that
I can't stick up for myself, obviously. I can.
Exactly. But, you know, feminism, people have a problem with the word feminism having feminine, I guess, but it's insanely, because obviously, well, as you say, it's not having a White History Month or, you know, having saying, well, you've done all this stuff about slaves, but when are we going to hear about the slave owners and have a day for them? And, you know, HIV Awareness Day, I haven't got AIDS, when will there be a day for me? And it's the same, you know, it is exactly the same thing.
And it often happens when you talk about Women's Aid. People are like, oh, well, where's Men's Aid? I'm like that. Well, tell you what, get a squat, put a mattress on the floor, have jumble cells for the entirety of the 80s, which was how we funded the women's movement, and then maybe we'll take you seriously. Set up your own refuge. Get on with it, mate.
Yeah.
Don't just be moaning at me because I did something good. And you wouldn't ring up. What I always say to people is, oh, well, it's not fair that a man can't stay in this refuge. It's like ringing up the Cats Protection League and saying, I've got this dog. Like, well, I suggest you open a dog shelter. Go and sort yourselves out. Yeah. You've got shitloads of capital. Use it. Not you, sorry, I'm not shouting at you.
No, it's okay. I feel partly culpable for having a penis.
You are.
Yeah, I am. I definitely am. I've done so much bad stuff. I've got to atone for it somewhere. One day a year. So, J.K. Rowling is a fan?
Yeah.
Has she read the book, or is that what Jess...
That's just something she just said about me, anyway. Yeah. Just completely unprompted. I didn't even know the woman at this point. I felt so delighted. And then I met her, and she was really normal.
Yeah.
Like, I really expected her not to be really normal because
did
she's
did you think
like,
she'd be magic?
Well, just... like the magic of money. Because she's very rich, isn't she? And she had, like, a cracked phone screen. I was like, you could get that fixed. But she was so lovely. She was really lovely and normal. But, yeah, she's she likes me.
Yeah, well, that's good.
That's nice, isn't it?
It is nice. So the Labour Party's in this weird position now where it's sort of... And you were talking about whether you'd be deselected or whether you'd be selected. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a genuine worry?
No. I don't live in London or Liverpool, which seems to be where the main sort of activism of deselection is going on.
I mean, you're popular amongst your people in Yardley.
Yeah.
But it's... It's an odd thing. Is there not, you know? It feels like a rainbow alliance of broadly left wing parties, and even you know, if the Labour Party itself can't be united in itself, then the idea of
it's a massive tragedy that the Labour Party can't get on, and both sides are to blame for that. I take some of the blame myself, but it's a massive shame and a massive distraction, and ultimately it will lose us the election.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, it's nothing to be happy about, is it? There's no fun in...
Although
in
you did a lot better than you were anticipating in the last one.
I mean, but she was the shocker, wasn't she? Honestly, I started to feel sorry for her. Like, wanted to ring up her team and be like, just don't say that. When she didn't turn up to the event and she sent Amber Rudd, she just looked like a coward.
Yeah.
And you don't want a coward running your country, especially if there's like... terrorist incidents going on at the time.
Yeah,
she was just... But the best thing about the British democratic system was that when she looked so forlorn, she had to stand next to a man with a bucket on his head. Oh, God, it was so surreal. But, yeah, it was much better, much better. And some of that is to Corbyn's credit. He was much more... He was much better than her, wasn't he? That's the top and bottom of it.
Yeah, well, I think... But there was an element where it was just... I suppose it's both those. It's the arrogance of going, we're doing this because we want a bigger majority, so we can just do what we want, which people aren't. It's not
a
great
very
starting
British,
place.
Yeah, it's not a very British thing to do.
And then
it?
Running away and not being involved. I mean, and I think if the election had been after the Grenfell fire, I think they would have lost.
No, I think had the election been 5 weeks before, because we had a mayoral election in the West Midlands, which the Tories easily won in a very Labour area. Had the election been 5 weeks earlier, she would have got more of a majority. She would have got more than the 12 that she had when she left. And had it been 5 weeks later, the Labour Party would have won.
Yeah.
No two ways about it. But I think we are out of landslide territory now. The country has changed, where big parliamentary majorities are gone now. We're going to live in coalitions and small majorities for a good few years. Yeah, because I think people in the sort of we've had enough, you're all the same, and people have polarised into Tory or Labour back to the way it used to be. I think that it's much harder to sort of get a sway one way or the other. So I think that people have just had enough and they don't want anyone to have that much power.
Yeah.
The British people are pretty on it in an election. And I could feel throughout the election campaign, because we spoke to 21,000 people in my constituency in 6 weeks, you could feel the change. And the day before the election, I said, I think that she'll go back with the exact majority she had when she left. And obviously she didn't even get that.
No.
But it felt like everybody was just going... This has been a waste of time.
Yeah, yeah.
We're just going to give her a bit of a bloody nose, but nothing too serious.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not surprised what happened, really.
Although, is that, Matt, that people trying to make a mass decision? It feels to me that Brexit was a bit like that as well. People going, I'll vote leave because I think that will, if it's 52-48, that'll make them feel a certain way. Well, even Boris Johnson and Michael Gove were kind of banking on being 52-48 in the other direction
so they could
become leaders of the Conservative Party.
I know, that's a shame.
I think they still might do it. I don't know. Who do you think's going to take over from Theresa May?
Well, all the stars point to Boris again this week, but we'll see what happens next week. I don't know. I think
you were quite complimentary about Rees-Mogg a few months ago.
Well, I wouldn't want him to be the leader of the Conservative Party. I walked up to him on one occasion to have a chat with him and basically told him I'd burn the building down if he became the leader. You know, I value the decision-making over one's womb. I think that the next one will likely... It does seem like it's going to be Boris at the moment. But I think it will be somebody we don't think of yet, that we're not aware of. I think maybe Sajid Javid or somebody who's not really saying anything or doing anything controversial at the moment.
And do you think it's a problem that the Tories have had two female prime ministers and leaders and that Labour's never even had a female... I mean, again, you were obviously very annoyed about the divvying up of the Chadwick cabinet seats.
Yeah, I'm really annoyed about it.
There felt like a point where it was going to be female leaders in every party for it seemed
except
for a while.
For the Labour Party.
Yeah.
And even now in Scotland, where all the they are all women,
yeah,
apart from Labour, which is now male. It's a terrible shame, and something has to be done about it. And the only way that something will be done about it is if we change the rules to make it be a woman, or if some of the men decide that they're not going to push themselves forward.
Yeah.
That's the top and bottom of that problem.
Sure.
Because equality in the Labour Party, men like to talk a good game, but they don't realise that equality isn't just about pushing someone forward, it's also about pushing some people back.
Yes.
Take a step backwards.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, yeah, I really think we should have a woman leader. Oh, you mean me? You mean me? You mean I shouldn't stand? But I'm meant for this.
But it is, I suppose, if you're a politician and you're a career politician, that's the thing you're ultimately aiming for. And a lot of people have obviously fall by the wayside. I mean, when I was a kid, Michael Heseltine was famously going to be the one who was heading that way, and then it all went wrong for him, and now he seems... Happy. Almost the most reasonable Tory in the country.
I know, it's funny how things have turned out, isn't it?
Now you're thinking, oh, maybe Michael Heseltine wouldn't have been so bad. I think he would have been.
Yeah. Didn't he strangle a dog to death?
I believe he did do something along those lines.
Put it in a bin.
Yes, he's had a, you know...
I think it was for humane reasons, yeah, to strangle a dog to death.
I want to have your husband on the show because he's a lift engineer. I'm quite obsessed with... Well, he wouldn't talk to me about it backstage.
He just wouldn't talk to you about it on film.
He's like a
shy character. But he has... He's like... I am like this with like courtroom drama, somebody who spent time in courts and things with during rape trials and things like that. Whenever there's a court drama on TV, I'm like, that would never happen. That would never happen. He's like that with any lift-based drama. So, and you laugh, but there's much more lift-based drama than you think. So Die Hard is a good example.
Yeah. I don't ruin Die Hard for me.
It is his favourite film, but it wouldn't happen. And Speed, there's a whole lift thing in that he categorically says could never happen. Yeah. I said to him, so what could happen? Tell me a time. And he said, you know, in like the original Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, he's going to like fight at the ring when he's first starting to be Spider-Man, and he gets in a lift and goes up a floor. He's like, that could happen. So every time now you see any lift-based drama, men surfing on the tops of lifts, people pulling them up, cutting the wires, couldn't happen. So just you can think of him in
have
all those times.
Have you ever been trapped in a lift?
I have never been trapped in a lift, but Sophie, who works for me, she got trapped in a lift the other day. Yeah. And she just said it got very, very hot very, very quickly, and she was with a Tory MP.
Right.
And... not obviously not one of the ones we'll talk about not getting in lifts with.
Because they have their separate lifts. Women aren't allowed in. Certainly black people aren't allowed in.
There are actually lifts in Parliament that some people aren't allowed in.
I know.
You know?
There was an MP who
Dawn Butler, who was told to get out the lift. I've never been stuck in a lift, but he has got some absolutely cracking stuck in lift-based stories.
He sounds good. I should have got him on.
You should have got him on.
It wouldn't have been all this depressing stuff. people have had sex in lifts, haven't they? And they've been trapped in there, haven't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not going to join in.
He's not going to join in. He is in the audience. If you can spot him, you can ask him lift-based questions.
So you've got two teenage kids. Are they both teenagers?
No, one of them is about to be 13. Okay. He's 13 in May, and one is 9.
Oh, okay. But you had kids quite... You're still a very young woman.
Oh, thanks.
And you had kids quite young, because I had
I'm officially a millennial.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm right on the cusp.
Yeah. I had kids very late in my life. Are you glad you had... I mean, because that's...
I'm really glad I had them sooner, and I come from the generation where we all had to play with those dolls that cried to stop us having babies when we were 16. And I actually think we should encourage people to have babies when they're younger, because I think that, like, I'm getting my life back now, and I watch all my friends run around parties and shit, and they're, like, having to run around after their toddlers, and I just am like, Harry, get me a beer.
So, I'm definitely not getting my life back. I'm 50 years old and I have a 4-month-old son. Oh, my life is over.
That is.
I have no life.
That is terrible.
Yeah, there's no. But I lived quite a life. I lived quite a life up to until I met my wife, and then she ruined everything. By making me happy.
When I'm 50, Harry will be 28.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll have to be a grandma by the time I'm 50, I hope. That would be excellent. And I think it's good to have your children young. Because...
But you became pregnant very early in the relationship with
them. Yes, I think Tommy's loving this in the audience.
Were you in a lift together? Was he showing you how a lift worked?
It's all up and down. very early on in our relationship, but we'd known each other for a very long time before, like, we were mates, like, although he questioned that just this morning, because my kids like to ask questions, like, did you and Dad do this, were you friends then, and I always say we've been friends since we were about 12, and he was just like, I mean, acquaintances, we drank in the same pub, like, we didn't really. We weren't really friends, were we? I thought we were like dear friends. we sort of kicked around together for many years before.
Okay.
So it wasn't like a shock. But the first time I met his mum, I was pregnant.
Yeah, already. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's sort of cool. It's very cool that it's worked. You know, like that.
Really worked. Yeah. Although, once again, I feel like I'm just giving him out. Just get him up here. We were talking to the people in the bar before we came out when you were with Trevor and Simon.
What, last week?
Sorry, last week. Yeah. And they were deciding whether they wanted, like, the power of hindsight, him and the barman. And he said, like, imagine if you found out immediately after a decision you'd made that it was the wrong one. What if you, like, married somebody and then the next day you found out she wasn't the right one? And he just said... We've just got to make it work. To this young lad on the bar. He was just like, no, that's the time when, you know, you stick with your decision and you just make it work.
You've
like
got
that.
A pregnant mate. You're just going to stick, however bad it is, stick with it.
I think that's true. You've got to just stick with it, make it work.
But I sort of think that about love, you know. I think I was waiting, in some ways waiting for the one, in some ways not wanting to find the one. But actually it's just when you decide... This is the one I'm going to make it work with.
You know? That's definitely true. I made a decision.
Yeah.
Because we got together. I feel like I'm not in an audience full of people.
Your kids were going to be in the audience. So that's like, I wasn't going to bring it up with your kids. So.
That we got together and, like, I just wasn't sure. And then I just decided. I thought, just go out with the person who's not a wanker to you.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, like, you know, but if you read the book and you had some very bad experiences.
Yeah, horrible boyfriends. Yeah. But, you know, we're trained sort of to like people who are basically massive arseholes to us. And I just thought, well, he's really nice. I'll give this one a go. And then I was like, happy forever?
Yes.
Aww.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not forever.
So far, so good. Although something like 40% of MPs end up getting divorced.
Yeah.
So, you never know.
You've got your pick of any of those Tory MPs.
Oh, woo-woo. There's a few hotties.
Yeah.
There are a few
if
hotties.
If you had to have sex with a Tory MP...
It's a really, really easy answer, but I'm not going to give it. He's a married man, but he'll know. There's not many. There's like three or four
that
are vaguely passable.
How about Vince Cable? I know he's not a Tory.
Vince Cable is like my mate, one of my best friends, yeah. Ruth. He's her uncle. And so, like, you know, I like danced with him at her wedding and he took all the chips.
Yeah.
And he doesn't eat his greens. Some facts about Vince Cable.
I was on a TV show with him the other week and I'm very impressive.
He's not going to
get anywhere, is he?
I mean, he hasn't got
much time left, has he?
He's made it to the top.
I thought the Liberals might have.
Too much of a betrayal.
Yeah.
People can't forget. People where I live can't forget. So, no. Bedroom tax.
Yeah.
The end.
But it was so obviously foolish. That's why you watch politicians doing stuff and you go, why are you doing that?
Know.
It's obviously going to blow up in your face.
It's like everywhere Nick Clegg walked, yeah. It was like...
He'd done really well in that election. He'd done really well and he could have, you know, he made a different decision and people would have liked him.
But to be fair to them, what decision could they have made?
Well, I think not gone with the Tories
I agree, I wouldn't have done that.
Used it to go for another election. It just was so obviously going to destroy them. It's like the Brexit vote, Cameron deciding to do the Brexit vote, was just, where's the gain in this? Because...
He would win.
I know, but
because he's never taken a risk that didn't pay off in his life because he's a rich boy. He doesn't know what risk taking is.
What's happened to him, eh? Where's he? Where's he these days? But do you see though? See all the prime ministers made into the opposite sex that they did this week?
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah.
Loved
he was about the second best looking woman. Both the female prime ministers looked very, very, very much like proper old men. and who was it? Was it Anthony Eden who looked like a film star? One of them was nice. That's the if he was a Tory, that's the Tory I would shag, but only if he was made into a woman and wasn't. Wasn't dead. What the hell I'd do it anyway. If I had to do it, I would. Hey, we're probably coming to the end of our time. It's been really fascinating. And is there anything you'd like to get off your chest and discuss?
Not really.
How are you getting on with Jeremy Corbyn these days?
Don't really talk to him very often. He's quite busy, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, giving those to Czechoslovakia and looking at manhole covers. I don't really see him very often, but fine, we get on fine. You talk to his office more than you talk to him.
Yeah.
But he's fine.
He's on the allotment a lot, isn't he? Making
well,
jam.
He whenever you're around him, he always tries to give you his lunch. Like, it's a tiny bit annoying because it's often like potatoes with cheese on them because he's a vegetarian. But he tried to give my son a salad sandwich when he was first elected. We'd gone up to have a photo taken with him, so my son was writing something in the school newspaper. And he tried to give him a salad sandwich and he was like, oh, have this sandwich. You must be hungry. And my kids were like, no. And then on the doorstep recently with my son Danny, this bloke was like, I'm not sure about that Corbyn. I don't think he's not one of us, is he? And Danny sort of tried to stick up for him and was like that. He tried to give me a salad sandwich once. And the bloke was like, that's the final nail. Shut the door. If it had been sausage, that would have been a vote for one.
It's the worst thing an MP has ever done to a young boy. thank you so much for coming in to talk.
No worries.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jess Lewis, future leader of the Labour Party, future Prime Minister. You have been listening to Rich Chang's Let's Spare Their Podcast with me, Rich Chang, and my guest, Jess Phillips, MP. The music is by Pest. Thank you to everyone that I always thank. You're all good. You know who you are. I don't need to mention your names. Oh, okay, then go on. Go past the Stripe team. They're good. Little Chris Evans, cheeky Chris Evans, not that one. All his little children he's got, they're growing up fast, my friends. Thank you to Let's Spare Theatre. Thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide. Thank you to Ian Tunes and Ewan Tune for hosting us on their websites. And thank you to my, I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. And thank you to everyone at Fuzz Productions, GoFasterStripe.com Productions, and Sky Potato Productions. This is a production for the internet.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.